Randuddle reel 4. So, how do you stop the pin coming out if there's no bolt?
Well, that's it. Once the bridge was built, then it had to be maintained, especially on the big bridges. With the vibration of tanks, for instance, you're talking about not various sizes of daily bridges. There's a single panel one, which is only for light traffic, such as jeeps and maybe 3 tonners wagons. And then it's such as medium to big tanks. We talk about the Churchill being 40 tonnes. These bridges have to be doubles and sometimes trebles. And then another double or treble on top of that for the bigger stuff. And with the vibration, the pins were... I've often wondered why they never had such a thing as a split pin. It would have to be more than a pin to go through. Which obviously must have been tried, but didn't work. It'd probably break the ends of these things. But as I say, on the big bridges, they always have to be follow-up engineers again. Probably army troops, called army troops. And looking the panel pins, but even though they perhaps only moved half an inch, eventually they'd move on and on, and everything would collapse. So it was a case of banging them back through the whole lot.
And apart from panels, did he use girders as well?
There was there was girders, flame girders. And I think these were made, that's right, they were crossways. Maybe one every 6 feet. Steel, these. And maybe laid in. And I think it was, as I say, laid in. Didn't have to be fastened because they were in between the two panels, so they couldn't move anywhere. And on top of that were the boards. Probably like scaffolding boards that you see on buildings. You know, on the...
Wooden board? So what tools were you working with? A hammer?
Oh yeah, a mallet, yeah. Oh yeah. For knocking the pins in, yeah.
A wooden mallet?
I wouldn't say now whether it was wood or leather or some tough element anyway. But I couldn't, not an ordinary hammer.
Why not?
I don't know, but I don't think it was a case of using an ordinary hammer.
Was there much manhandling that you had to do?
Well, it was all manhandling.
Was it heavy muscular work?
Well, it was probably six of you. Two. Pretty walking out across the bridge, because as you're building the bridge, then the girders are going across and the boards are put down, so you move on behind where they got up to. And the actual panels themselves, whether they would be four of us or six of us, I don't know. Could there be you on this side and another bloke on that side? It was all manual stuff, yeah.
Did you have to be strong?
Well, strong enough, I suppose. I haven't been very strong. I was only 8 stone something then. Yeah. 120 pounds when I joined up. 8 stone 8. But I was. Yeah. But you were fitted. You were fit, you see. You were never... I don't know why we... You never remember being tired.
Did you find it different?
During all of Normandy and France and Belgium and Holland and into Germany.
Did you find it difficult to lift these panels?
No. They stood up on the back of a truck. open, well, not open wagon, but canvas cupboard. And there'd be two up on the wagon, and they just slid them across the, you know, down the inside of the truck. And there'd be another four or six or whatever it was, taking the weight as it got near the back of the thing, and then lifting them down and getting them down on the deck, and then set shells out to walk away with them. And they were heavy, obviously, they had to be heavy to carry all the weight that they carried. But putting them together, it was only like putting a can or something together. Mm.
Did you ever get any injuries in setting them up? So, you were telling me about pushing into Belgium. If you can take the story on from there, please.
Well, I went right through Belgium. I remember we more or less went up the coast all the way once we got beyond the Arles. And then we went through Brussels. Bypassed Antwerp, apparently Antwerp, the whole area of the estuary had been mined by the Germans, and we needed Antwerp to bring supplies across, because previous to that it only built what they call Mulberry Harbours on the Normandy beaches. They were floating harbour, the marvellous thing that was. Where they got stuff ashore on them. And as I say, we were carrying all these rations and so far up into Belgium. It was just, you couldn't keep up with it. When I say you couldn't keep up with it, the army were going that fast. They were getting too far in front of the supplies, and all the supplies had to come across land. Until they got Antwerp opened up, then things started to move again and into Holland. Talking about the French people before, again, it's something a little bit you always remember. This farm, only 3 or 4 days after D-Day, and we had a water wagon, but we were empty, coming out of water. And so we'd gone to this farmhouse with a big Dixie thing, asking them for water. They didn't want to know us. They'd probably not had a bad life under the Germans, the people who lived out in the country, not like the townsfolk.
So how did you respond to that?
Well, we didn't. We just accepted it. You know, obviously got water from somewhere.
Did you swear at him?
And you probably, yeah.
Did you swear at him?
Yeah, probably did. Yeah. Because, if you hadn't been having a bad time with the Germans, they're not going to be too happy welcoming others ashore or anything like that. Quite a lot of French civilians killed in Normandy, as in all these other places now. You know, with the bombing raids and our bombers, the Lancasters and the flying forces and all those. And, where were we?
You were in Belgium.
Oh yeah, we were in Belgium. Well, just from where we passed through. Oh, we went actually, we went coastwise as far as had to go inland at Antwerp. It was a very wide estuary, so you went inland. And before that, northern France, getting back to northern France again, it's called the Pas de Calais area. And that's where the V1s have been shooting from. Not the V2s, they were fooled about. And yeah, that's the way we went. So our division, I mean, not just our little unit, I'm talking about the whole caboose. And through Brussels, and one or two more fair-sized places. Can they remember? Some blokes can remember every village and every street. None of us can, unless somebody mentions something, and it clicks. Yeah. I say we went to Holland, and one of our own lads, he was a bit of an expert with radio and electrics and all this sort of thing. And I always remember outside of Eindhoven, we'd stopped. And there, across two fields away, was Philip's factory. And so, Crasher worked, we called him Crasher. He crashed wagons all over the place. Crasher Wilson, poor lad. He got killed the day after the Armistice of Orphanage. He was a dispatch rider, as well as our dispatch rider. And he was on a roundabout or a crossing or something like that.
And, you were just talking about the Phillips factory.
Yeah, the Phillips factory. Straight away, he was over. Get over there and get a radio, you see. He'd even built a generator for ourselves out of nothing. And we must have got about a dozen radios. Now, what are we're alternate, aren't we? Current, AC, DC.
Alternating current.
Yeah. And each one we got, as soon as we put it on, boom, just blew up. Because it was direct current, or vice versa. So that was the end of that. We got up into Eindhoven, and from then on, we're now right in September, the ironing business, which was a complete cock-up failure. They couldn't get out. And the land, they were all airborne. And the land troops couldn't get through them quick enough to help out because all the fields and that were all flooded. The germs had just flooded the fields. And that was a quiet period. November. And it was that quiet, well, all units, I suppose, two or three at a time, a few at a time could go back to Antwerp for a few days, so called leave. So myself and another couple of lads, so anyway, we decided we'd take it. Anybody could take it, somebody wanted to know. We too could get it for 4 days there. 5 days, whatever.
What was that like?
Drinking and you name it. It was, very good. Plenty of women. Yeah. Then we had to go back again. We got back just in time to see us getting battered. There was an artillery battery just down the road, and Jenny got the sights on them and got the distance and everything, and blew them out of the ground, you know. And that was beginning of December. And we got into Nijmegen. That's the town. It's all changed, probably all changed now, 50 years ago. But that was all through the countryside, the road out of Eindhoven to Nijmegen. It was the main road now. And the Americans had captured a bridge on the river wall, WWAL, American paratroop. And the bridge at Nijmegen, that was won over before they could blow it up. So we thought we were going to have a nice Christmas in Eindhoven, in Nijmegen. And then where was it? Round about the 20th, maybe a bit early, I don't know. It was when the Germans had the last batch of coming through the Ardennes forest. And they did that. And I can only say what was said at the time, most of the American troops in that sector had never seen any kind of action. And we just couldn't do them. Jerry just broke right through them. You know, as far as the story goes, and that Battle of Bastogne and the American sector. But our division and 50 Div and another division, we got pulled right back down into eastern Belgium, where the river. Anyway, Lierre is down here. There's a big river there. It was the middle of winter, middle of December time. So the Ardennes was mountain country. So it was at that time when another funny little incident there, outside the A's, they were flying, the flying bombs were being fired at the A's at the time, quite a few. And this one comes over and his engine cuts out, and we'd only just stopped. And we were lifting ammunition boxes out of one of the trucks, one of the wagons, when this thing stopped. And what do we all do? We drop on the floor, and where we dropped is amongst all this ammunition. Whereas if the thing had hit that, we'd gone with it. But it's silly little incidents like that, and you remember and you laugh about it after. We took cover and then the ammunition boxes.
Were there many V1 attacks in the Liège area?
There was quite a lot. Whether there were more than one, then I don't know. But there were a hell of a lot. And also, is that any V2? No. There'd be a man to it. When we took this short lead in Antwerp, Jerry was firing the V2s then. And Antwerp was getting quite a bashing with the V2s, the rockets. And so then, between us and the Americans there, and we probably cleared the jelly right back out of the Ardennes. It was said at the time that the only thing that beat him, the overrun his supplies. Tanks were there, abandoned, nothing wrong with them, just ran out of fuel. Otherwise, he'd have been through and probably cut the two armies in half. But he seemed that what he was after was getting onto it back to stop our supplies coming across the channel, sort of thing. But we were lucky. God must have been lucky with those few years. Yeah, well, we got away with the invasion to start with. Without Jerry knowing all about it, he didn't. The whole of this area, all of the south of England, right from Kent all the way to Cornwall, it was tanks and troops and you name it. And now Jerry never really got to know. Don't know. Look at the draw, I suppose.
Were you at Liège for very long?
No. I personally, no. Because the beginning of January, discarded all leaves. Now you couldn't all go, a small unit like ours couldn't all go together, so it was a case of drought of the hat. Alright, the ones that have landed on units and companies and divisions, etc., who landed on D-Day or D-1 or whatever, they've got preference. And as they stayed in there along, they thought they should get the leaves first, but that was what it was. But with all, there probably were a lot more small units. It was a case of drought with a hat, couldn't all go on leave together. And we were in the up the river Core. That's a big river.
The Meuse.
The Meuse, that's right. M-E-U-S-E. Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. And anyway, we pushed him back, haven't we? Yeah.
So you.
So what's the leaves I was talking about? Yeah. We drew out of the hats. And again, it's a little thing I can see there. How can you change in the back of an open wagon? It was the middle of winter and the snow was like this. It was really, really bad. Now we talked about the French. Some of the French didn't like this. It was the same with these Eastern Belgians. It was next door to Germany anyway. And there were another lot that didn't like it being over there. And as I say, when I came out of the hat, 7th of January, I think I was probably about the first one out. And we went to this house, by the river, the Pan and Meuse. And there's a guy in Pidgin English or whatever. Could have gone in there to get changed. No way, so I had to get changed in the back of the old open wagon. And then it was all the way back across down through Holland and France to Dover.
How did these people in Eastern Belgium show their dislike?
Well, that was the only incident I noticed. They could have let me in to get change. You know, you've always got you've never had any best battle dress, but you always had one that was better than the one you used during any action. So, as I say, you did say something about how long were you in the Ardennes?
Yeah. You were telling me about going back to Lee. You went back to Manchester, presumably.
Yes. Oh, yes, yeah.
And then did you return to Belgium or to Germany?
I returned, and here again it's comical. All these leaves had started, and they had a little, call it a cold word if you like, and you belonged to such and such a party when you were at home. And every lunchtime on the radio, an announcement was given out. Over the radio. We've been told about this in the first place. With regards to which parties should report back to London. Ready to go back down across the channel. Well, I've forgotten the number I was belonging to then. And I think it was only 7 days, I think. There was nothing more than that. And my leave was up, so I was listening to the announcement, such and such a party, and that was all it was, nobody knew anything about it. And so it didn't come up on the radio, so I just packed my bags in London Road Station, which is Piccadilly Station now, Manchester. And away I went. Now we all know that one of the reasons for this was because of the state of the crossings. The channel crossings, which still are some of the worst in the world. And the channel has got rough all at once, more than half an hour or an hour. And I got down to Euston Station, and there's redcaps all over the place. What party are you? Such and such. Right. Go down there. There's a hotel there. Go in there. And it'll be sorted out. Probably be there 24 hours, maybe more. I was there 5 days in London. And I think I had a few bob in my pocket that I'd gone back with to spend on the way down. Just a few shillings, 4 or 5 shillings, something like that. And I got in a cafe. I can only say it was on the line because I'm sure it was on the lines. Gone out of this. And I'm talking to this silly. And then I don't know. Got around to sport and horse racing and dogs and such like. Said, you do greyhounds? I said, yes. And I went at home. Said, well, there's a meeting at Haringey. I'm like, come along. Yes. Afternoon meeting, it's got a blackout, so it was afternoon meeting. And about 5 winners out of 8 races, which is good by any standards. And I didn't know a dog from a donkey down there. I knew a few of them that were up in Manchester, but I didn't have a clue. And about 5 winners, I finished up with a few pounds in the pocket. So I was made up. Didn't matter whether I never went back. Few pounds was a lot of money. Anyway, eventually it was back, it was go back. I think I was there about 5 days. And got down to Dover, everything in order, you know, on the whatever it was, it took us across there. I got into Calais, and where are you from? Somewhere up in Holland. Right, there you are. There's some lessons for you. You made your own way back, all the way from Calais, right up through northern France, right up through Belgium, and right up northern Holland, sort of thing. Now, I do believe a lot of blokes deserted and probably got away with it, married Belgian or French or whatever women, and got away because there was no tag on it. I was just getting lifts all the way up, right through France, mainly with the Americans. You know, they'd stop for anything. And rations. They'll give you a box of rations as big as this. Well, we had a little 24-hour pack. And so eventually I got back to the unit. And things, as I say, things were starting to move again.
In what way?
Forward through the forest called the Reich, the Reichwald Forest. It's on the German, Dutch-German border. There's something else, I don't know what it was now. That's come back.
Were you in the fighting in the Reichwald?
No. Well, you know, it's... I've always said that I saw a little bit more action